Welcome to Velocity, the Vista Chamber podcast. I'm your host, Vista Chamber CEO, Rachel Beld, and it's my privilege to interview the movers, shakers, and change makers impacting our Vista community and beyond. Joining me today is Dave Baldwin from LS Investment Management. Dave is a financial advisor, author, and certified financial planner. He's a San Diego native and currently lives in Oceanside with his wife, Andrea, and their two kiddos. However, Dave enlisted in the U.S. Navy right out of high school, which gave him the opportunity to see other parts of the world and to pursue higher education, receiving a bachelor's degree in electronic systems engineering, which I'm going to ask you about in a bit. After his enlistment ended, he transitioned to the financial services industry, which started him on a professional and personal path, which ultimately led Dave to meet his wife and their subsequent relocation to Oceanside. Dave, Andrea, and their two kids love all things Disney and are active members of North Coast Church, leading a weekly Bible study group for the last several years. Dave's also passionate about financial planning and helping others achieve their goals. He wrote and published a book in 2019 titled The Balancing Act to help readers understand the psychology of spending and to guide people through the challenges of budgeting with practical steps to achieve their financial goals. So prior to joining LS Investment Management, he earned his certified financial planner designation. He's also the current chair of the Vista Chamber Board of Directors. Welcome, Dave. Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Yeah. It's good to sit down. Okay. All right. So I want to ask you, you grew up in San Diego, obviously big military town. Did you always want to serve in the military? How did that happen after high school? Was that an obvious choice for you?
Not really. In high school, I probably wasn't as motivated as I should have been. I was a little young, I think, for my age. I, you know, was 17 when I graduated. Mm-hmm. My sisters did really well in high school. So they knew they were going to go to college and they already had, you know, kind of that career path, if you will, lined out. I didn't really start getting serious about what I wanted to do until I was probably like a junior or senior. And by that point, it was just too late to, you know, get into college right away. So the military kind of became a way to, you know, do a little bit of growing up. But I wouldn't, it definitely wasn't something that I had my heart set on from, you know, the time I was a child or anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then, but your job was electronics technician. So why did you choose that? Did they choose it for you? Tell me, tell me how that works.
That's a great question. There is a little bit of kind of they choose for you.
Okay.
Because it's sort of the needs of the Navy at the time. But
okay.
Also, you take this test that sort of shows what your aptitude is. And I scored well on the test, which kind of gives you the ability to pick any job. And, you know, this is the late 90s, right? So computers were, you know, pretty...
All the
they
rage.
They weren't new by any means, but, you know, the internet was kind of a pretty new thing. So I knew that I wanted to get into something sort of computer and electronic related. And, you know, kind of one thing led to the next. And I just became an electronics technician because that seemed like a good. And again, I was 17 years old when I chose. So I didn't really know.
Yeah.
It turned out to be great. Yeah.
What does an electronics technician do?
Radios.
Okay. So I think about when you see a movie in the Navy, you see all those buttons and like switches and lights. So I think when I read that you're an electronics technician, I thought of you like flipping switches and pressing buttons.
Yeah. So I fixed radios.
Okay.
I mean, that's really what it came down to. And it was a neat job, but I would rather just buy a new radio or television if mine broke. Like I don't really have a passion for fixing stuff. And honestly, I think the Navy even kind of moved in that direction. Like they just kind of got to the point where it's cheaper to just replace something. So
yeah.
It doesn't really make sense to tear it open and start soldering equipment back together.
Yeah. Well, technology moves so quickly
that
things are obsolete so fast, especially, you know, in the military, they want to be cutting edge and ahead of the curve on technology. So, okay. Interesting. I just, when I read that in your bio, I was really surprised because if I'm sitting around thinking about the various people on our board and the folks that I know, I'm not like, Dave, he fixes radios. Like that's not the vibe that I get from you really. So it was surprising to me.
Well, and even my degree, you know, like I said, kind of in high school, I hadn't really applied myself well enough to, you know, position myself to go to college. So I joined the Navy, and then I realized, you know, I really do want to get a degree, and I want to, you know, at the time I thought maybe I'd go to law school or do something professional. And really getting a bachelor's degree was just sort of an ends, you know, like
check
it was
the
just,
box.
So I thought, what's the easiest degree I could get? And, you know, I chose a degree that was something that I had a background in. Mm-hmm. So it was more or less take some tests, show up to a couple classes here and there, but more or less I just needed to get past it. In retrospect, I wish I would have gotten a degree that was more, you know, maybe finance or economics related, but that kind of, that's what got me where I am. So,
well, I think of that as being very efficient, because obviously going to school, it takes time, it takes resources, it takes money. And if you're going to get a degree in something where you already have expertise, then you're already halfway there. So, you know, and there maybe maybe with your, the way your career turned later, you got that economics and finance.
Yeah, it was a lot anyway. Of on the job training,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. All right. So speaking of that, so tell me about your transition to financial services. How did that happen? Were you just fixing a radio and you're like, I need more money?
No, there's a couple of things. So I did honestly want to go to law school. I had taken my LSATs. I was kind of preparing when I got out of the Navy to do that. And it was going to be expensive. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, I had been able to get my degree just through the military, GI Bill, tuition assistance, and just paying for it out of pocket. So I had no debt at that point. And I didn't know that I really wanted to sign myself up for the debt of going to law school. And I had, as I was getting out, I had gone to a job fair and I met somebody who was in the financial services industry. And they said, well, you know, you could do something in this field, which is not legal by any means, but it's still a professional job. It's still something that, you know, you are helping people in the same way that you might if you were like an estate attorney or something like that. So I decided to kind of pivot and try that out. And it just turned out to be the career that I really enjoyed and loved and wanted to do more of. Mm-hmm. So that was 2005. So I've been doing this for 17 years, and I like it.
Well, and so now you're a certified financial planner. So what does that mean as far as like the education part?
Yeah. So there's as with most professions, there's kind of a small percentage that might try to, you know, or can kind of be recognized as sort of the top within that profession. And so the certified financial planner designation is just the designation in my industry that sort of separates, you know, the top of that industry, much like you might within the tax world have a certified public accountant. Mm-hmm. So a CFP professional is just somebody that is, you have to have at least 5 years in this business. You have to pass a pretty rigorous test. And, you know, it's almost a master's degree level of education to qualify for that test. That's just a designation that I wanted to get to sort of show that I'm competent and serious about this career and kind of take my level of service to that next.
Well, and I'm sure it gives your clients a level of comfort, especially maybe new clients. If you have a certification like that, it's like, oh, this guy knows what he's talking about.
That's the goal.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So tell me about your book. What led you to write your book?
Oh, so the balancing act, it was something that I feel personally, I've always kind of struggled or had that challenge with really understanding why am I compelled to spend on things that don't always make sense. Right. And the psychology behind it was really what interested me at first. This was back in 2017. The gentleman who had won the Nobel Prize for economics, his name was Richard Thaler. He was kind of looking at the psychology of why we do what we do and a lot of the like biases that sort of control our decisions. And that just fascinated me. And it was something that, you know, I could have a conversation with somebody and tell them, well, hey, here's why you're struggling with your budget, or here's why you're struggling with that. But that's a very one, you know, one at a time conversation. If you have that conversation 50 times, it gets kind of, you know, it's hard to keep doing it. So by writing a book, I felt like I could at least get that information out there. And then you can share that with as many people as would like to read your book. And honestly, I didn't write it to as a moneymaker. It wasn't something that I thought I'm going to go be the next Dave Ramsey. I just wanted to be able to have my thoughts sort of written down in a way that I could hand to people. And as it's a self-published book, so it cost me, you know, a couple, $3 to print off a copy. I'd rather just give them away.
Right.
I mean, they are for sale on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or anywhere you get books online. But yeah, it's just, it's something that was kind of a tool to share with clients or friends or just anybody that could benefit from that.
Do you think that people innately know how to budget?
No.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think so many people struggle with it? I mean, I feel like I do an okay job with it, but it took a lot of practice and trial and error. And, you know, I'm married, so working with my husband, but why do you think so many people struggle?
Well, keep in mind that part of being a financial advisor is part sales. So having a little bit of an understanding of sales, all of us as consumers are up against a sales force that is, it is their job to separate us from our money. So they're going to make their product seem very appealing. They're going to make their product seem like something we just absolutely have to have. I mean, this is marketing 101.
Right.
And, you know, there's not a consumer 101 class that you take to defend yourself against that onslaught of marketing effort. And so, yeah, it's an unfair advantage. It's an unfair battle. And all of us are dealing with, you know, constantly being marketed to, and the psychology that they employ to appeal to our desire goes way beyond whatever pep talk you're going to give yourself about saving some money or budgeting. So, yeah, I think most people don't know how to budget. Most people struggle with it. And most people would never admit if they were having that challenge, because it's something that's very personal. You know, finances are very personal. So, again, being able to write that book and give that out as a tool without looking like, you know, oh, I'm going to tell you what you need to do or how to do it. Instead, someone gets to read a book, and that's a little bit less threatening, I think, from the person who's receiving that information than if I just sat in front of them and lectured them on what they should do.
Right.
So again, the book just becomes a little easier way to get that information out there, and hopefully it benefits people.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, you hear all the time in the news, the headlines are like, your latte is costing you a house, you know, and things like that. And thinking about these kind of sound bites of financial advice and maybe there's some truth to that, like, you know, could you save your $5 or whatever? But it's also bigger than those single purchases. Like you said, there's the psychology behind it.
And I think that, you know, people, they kind of blame the consumer. Right. Like, oh, you're where you are because you made poor financial decisions. Therefore, you deserve whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's, again, I mean, we're it's not fair. Right. I mean, as a consumer, you're just sort of. You're being constantly, you know, attacked, for lack of a better word, with, you know, someone trying to sell you something. So, again, it's not. Yeah, the latte and the avocado toast is not what's really causing the problem. It's every single purchase, and really part of that goes back to a decision that we all kind of make. Is this, if I want this thing, am I capable of buying that thing? And that decision could either start with looking at your bank account and saying, oh, I have a positive number there, right? Or can I borrow the money? Is the money there if I needed to use it to buy this thing? even if I could pay it back later. And that, I think, is probably what gets most people off track, is just the fact that if I'm a salesperson and I can sell you on this product and why you need this, don't worry about how you're going to pay for it. Just let me sell you on why you need it. Mm-hmm. Then the financing of it, the credit cards, or, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, all of those, what would otherwise be objections? I mean, you have a debit card, even if it's, you know, coming directly out of your bank, it's not a credit card, but a debit card still, that's point of sale, the moment of decision. You were capable and able to make that purchase because of all of the things that went into, again, you had that available. Go back 30, 40 years ago when people basically just had cash. How many people didn't buy something because, yeah, they wanted it, they really wanted it, but they didn't have cash on them and they, oh, okay, I'll come back later. And then they never did. So again, like if our parents or our parents' parents are like, it's all that avocado toast that you're buying. No, it's because I'm in a different world than they were. Mm-hmm. And it's just more difficult in this world to be able to make those defensive money decisions.
Well, and also avocado toast is really good.
It is really good, right?
I like it.
It's a personal favorite.
It is. Okay. So tell me about the best part of your job, of the work that you do. What's the best part?
I really like to help people. I feel a reward, a personal reward, when I'm given the opportunity to serve. And, it's not, obviously I get paid, mm-hmm. My clients pay me to do the work that I do, but a large part of my satisfaction comes just simply from being told I did a good job and kind of that pat on the back, attaboy. And that's personally very rewarding. So I think that's where I really enjoy my job, is when I've been able to do something positive for somebody and they feel it and they tell me that it was good. Then it's personally rewarding.
At what point in someone's life should they consult a financial planner?
You know, that's a really good question. I think, and I'm open to serving all people who want the service. My industry is, again, sort of looking at the efficiency of it. And if you can do an amount of work for someone with $1 million versus, you know, 20 people with mm-hmm. $50,000, mm-hmm. My industry is going to lean towards the higher net worth individual. And that, to me, you know, I have to make a living. But again, you know, I want to try to make myself available to anybody who, you know, wants my services. So I don't have any kind of account minimums or anything like that with who I'll work for. It's really just, are you going to take my advice and are you going to take this seriously? And if I spend time and energy and effort working with you, would you, you know, follow my steps? And I think that sort of opens me up to working with people that are maybe in their, you know, younger, maybe 20s or 30s. But most people don't have a sense of urgency about, you know, sort of needing to correct a problem or needing to, you know, until they're looking at retirement. And it doesn't seem so far off that it's something that we just can't fathom, mm-hmm. right? We as people, and I talk about this a little bit in my book about the psychology, we have a hard time sort of thinking about right now versus future. Mm-hmm. And if the future is far enough off that we can sort of forget about it, we don't worry about it. We focus on right now. And so, you know, if saving money is going to benefit future me, but spending money is going to benefit right now me, that tends to be, you know, the where the money's going to go. And when someone gets into their 40s and 50s, then they start looking at their future and thinking like, hey, retirement in 20 years is not that far away. I should probably be doing something. Mm-hmm. And so I do find that people are a little bit more serious about saving and retirement and asking for help when they're probably in their 40s or 50s. I don't think that it's something you have to wait till you're a certain age. I think in your 20s, it probably wouldn't hurt to have someone sort of giving you some direction and mm-hmm. help.
Well, and also I think waiting till your 40s, I'm in my 40s, I have kids at home, they're expensive, yeah. You know, there are activities and their ailments and whatever else. you know, adds up. And so it seems like, you know, really wise. I think if everybody had a time machine and could go back in time and focus on their finances when they're in their 20s, or even just, you know, out of high school into college or whatever, the beginning of their career, it would be really wise thing to do.
Of course. And time, you know, is really everyone's biggest asset, right? I mean, the what you do today and allow that to work over time just gets better and better and better the longer that it has to grow. And so, yeah, the sooner you can begin, the better off it is. But, you know, again, you're also dealing with that sort of, when does this become my priority, right? In your 20s, 30s, maybe that's not necessarily, retirement's not your priority. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to direct people, hey, you should put your money towards this priority that you don't have yet, but one day you're going to have. That's just that's a tough sell.
Yeah.
Hi, it's Carrie from Solatube Home in Vista, California. If you're looking for ways to brighten and cool your home, we are your natural light and fresh air experts. We offer a selection of daylighting and ventilation products to help make your home beautiful and comfortable. And the best part of all is you won't be using any electricity to brighten up. We can bring beautiful, natural light into those dark spaces in your home, transforming them into beautifully lit spaces in less than 2 hours. No mess, no fuss, just amazing natural light to make your home look and feel great. If you're looking to cool off your home, we have a complete line of ventilation products to keep your home and garage cool. We want to make cooling and refreshing your home easier and more energy efficient than ever with our line of whole house fans, solar attic fans, and garage fans. Our certified installers carry the full line of Solatube daylighting and ventilation products on their vans at all times. Installation can usually be done in about 2 hours. No messy drywall, paint repair, structural changes, or re-roofing needed. It's pretty much the easiest home improvement project you'll ever take on. At Solatube Home, we offer no obligation appointments throughout Southern California. Visit our website at solatubehome.com or stop by our showroom conveniently located in Vista at 2210 Oak Ridge Drive or give us a call, 619-375-1629. We look forward to brightening your day.
At J&R Auto Body and Paint, you don't have to worry about a thing. From minor dents and dings to major collision repair, we offer a worry, hassle-free experience with superior customer service. Our auto claim advisors work directly with your insurance company, so you don't have to deal with the headaches. Our certified technicians work on all makes and models to get your repair done right the first time. We stand behind our work with a lifetime warranty. Locally and family-owned, J&R Auto Body is here to serve the community. Call us today at 760-724-4923.
So what do you think is the hardest part of your work?
What's finding people who would want my services. So again, it's a very personal thing. You're not going to just meet someone and based on, oh, hey, you seem like a nice person. Here's all my finances, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of time developing relationships with people to where they would trust you in order to sort of have you handle that. And it's difficult because as much as we are sort of marketed to, and yeah, when it comes to spending money, it might, you know, we're sort of up against that marketing element. We're also very now hard and aware of when we're being sold to. Mm-hmm. And since financial planning and investment advice is not like a physical, tangible thing that might not seem immediately appealing, it's easier to sort of fight that battle of a marketer who's trying to sell you something that, again, doesn't have the immediate benefit. So, you know, from my perspective, it's difficult to meet new people and to grow from, you know, just getting more people to recognize what I can do for them. But most of my new business or new clients are really referrals from current clients. So it's getting easier. Mm-hmm.
The longer you do it, the more people you know, the more people that trust you, and then they refer you.
That's right.
So that's a great segue to talking about the chamber.
Yeah.
So tell me what made you decide to get involved with the Vista Chamber?
So, yeah, when I first moved I was up in Northern California for a little while. When I moved down here from there, I worked for a larger financial services firm, and you know, it's kind of, I wanted to kind of get into the community and just start, you know, hit the ground running, try to meet as many people as I could. And the chamber really seemed like a great way to just at least start networking, start mm-hmm. meeting people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wasn't really, I was kind of transplanting myself to North San Diego County, kind of Vista, Oceanside area. Yeah, the chamber just seemed like a really good way to just immediately get out there and meet people. Vista, I just, the way that North County is set up with, you know, kind of that 78 corridor, Vista is just central to everything, right? I mean, you can be in Escondido or you can run down Oceanside, and Vista is sort of that middle ground, just is kind of the, for me, kind of the perfect, most efficient place to be. And then, yeah, once I kind of got into the community and saw how awesome it is, then it was like, okay, I'm just going to keep volunteering for the everything at the chamber, whatever committees, you know, just do something mm-hmm. more than just be a member. Yeah.
And then you joined the board.
Yeah, I was invited to join the board, which was, and that was kind of a cool opportunity too, because I was, you know, volunteering to be like on the membership committee or the ambassador committee and trying to just be useful. And then, yeah, getting the invitation to join the board is kind of like, oh, hey, they appreciate me. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I like that little pat on the back. So mm-hmm. that was definitely a nice opportunity.
So you're the current chair of the board. And so our board serves, the board chair serves from July through June. Mm-hmm. And so your term just started recently. Yeah. So what are you excited about in that role? What attracted you to want to say, okay, sure, I'll do it.
Yeah. So I just really want to support the chamber. I think that, you know, we're as a community coming out of COVID and the pandemic, I think there's some challenges that, you know, from getting people sort of re-engaged, getting membership, getting everything turned back on. I think that we've all got some challenges. We've had a great experience so far. I mean, the Strawberry Festival was awesome. And, you know, we've seen, you know, everyone sort of re-emerging. And so, you know, I just felt like this was a really exciting time. It was something that, you know, I've wanted to do for a while, as far as, you know, throw my hat in the ring and be as helpful as possible. And, yeah, I just think that this is a really exciting time to get to partner with you and, you know, just lead the board and hopefully, you know, make sure we can kind of grow and get through this period.
Yeah. Well, thank you for volunteering, for stepping up and agreeing to be the chair. So, I mean, it's exciting to, I agree with you. I think, you know, getting through COVID, seeing what our community needs from us, seeing what our members need from us, and being able to just dive in to that experience and to dive into serving is a really cool opportunity. So I'm excited. I'm excited about what this next year holds for us. But okay, so what do you think is one of the bigger issues impacting Vista and Vista businesses? What are some things that just come to mind that you think businesses might need help with? Or,
well, and I think that you know, there's sort of this idea of sort of changing behavior, and COVID was a long enough experience that it wasn't a temporary change. People mm-hmm. have sort of adopted maybe new behaviors.
It was a disruption.
It was. And so, you know, getting takeout was always sort of like a every once in a while, right? And now I think it's become kind of a new norm. And there's so many businesses that benefit from being next to a restaurant. When you think about, you know, you go out to eat and then you got to walk around a little bit to burn off some of the food you just ate. So, hey, let me check out this store. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's challenges, like that's just one example, but I think that part of the challenge is how do we sort of get turned, you know, how do we get everybody back out in person the way that we were before, instead of buying everything on Amazon and, you know, ordering takeout. And I think that's a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that from the standpoint of being a financial planner and encouraging people to, you know, not spend money on things they don't need. The other side of that coin is, as a marketer, recognize that, you know, if you have someone physically in front of you and you have a product or a service that you can get them excited about, you have a much better chance of being able to sell that product or service. And so again, there is an element of, can consumers get back out to physically show up places mm-hmm. and, you know, do business with local businesses. And I think that's just one of the challenges we have to overcome.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, about your kids. So I know that one of the reasons that you do the work that you do is because you want to be an active participant in their lives. And so I'm curious about how you talk to your kids about money and finances. Do you have any tips for the parents in the audience who are maybe wondering, when is it appropriate to talk to my kids about money? Or when you're at the store and they say, Mom, can I buy XYZ? When you say no, I know my kids are like, well, do we not have money for it? And it's like, well, we do, but that doesn't mean we're going to buy it. So I'm curious how you talk to your kids about money.
No, and that's a great question. I think, you know, I don't know when the right age is to really start explaining a lot of the ins and outs of budgeting. But, you know, we do give them money for different thing, you know, obviously birthdays, they get money from family, or, you know, if they do something around the house, we'll be like, hey, here's $5, you know? Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I really don't want my kids to worry about it too much. You know, it's not, I guess I don't probably tell them, why we're not buying something or why we did buy something. Now, keep in mind, they're going to watch this. They will see this. So, I don't know, you know, again, some of those purchase decisions, maybe, you know, their mom and I might say, oh, you don't need that. And I have to admit, I haven't probably had a lot of conversations with them about, you know, the difference between a need and a want mm-hmm. or, you know, necessary or discretionary spending. But I don't think I think it's probably wise to have those conversations when they're young. I just don't know that it would be that impactful. Mm-hmm. You know, a really good friend of mine also wrote a book around the same time I wrote my book. His name's JJ Winrick. I'm going to give him a little shout out. His book was Teaching Kids to Buy Stock. And what he and I had kind of discovered as we were marketing our books is that there was a lot of interest from parents to buy his book because the title right there says Teaching Kids to Buy Stock. Mm-hmm. And, it was much more appealing from a marketing standpoint than, say, a book called The Balancing Act. Mm-hmm. It was clearly about budgeting. So I think there's definitely an interest out there for people to be able to teach their kids, talk to their kids about money. And yeah, I guess I haven't. So my kids are, my son They're just young. Turned 7. My daughter's 9. We probably haven't had a lot of conversation about money. Other than the fact that my daughter says she wants to be a financial advisor when she grows up.
That's cute.
Yeah. I think probably, you know, 12 is probably that age where I'll really want to try to focus on, mm-hmm. on that as a good topic. And I think the lesson, without getting into the intricacies of money and, you know, financial planning, is really immediate versus delayed gratification.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that if a child can understand the concept of saving for this thing, you know, that's probably the conversation to have. And so, yeah, I think that's a great way to say, hey, you were saving for this thing and now it's going to take you longer to achieve that. You know, if that's the thing that kind of sets off the light bulb.
Yeah.
Because again, like I said, we make a lot of our decisions about, hey, I have this thing in front of me that I want. Is it available to me? Do I have the means to be able to buy that right now? And that again is a right now thing versus, you know, something in the future. And it's much harder to be focused on the future. It's, you know, right now is right in front of us. Things that we can have right now are more valuable to us than things, the exact same thing in the future. And so again, that's kind of the lesson I think to teach kids. not necessarily here's a budget, here's,
right.
You know,
that's overwhelming. Maybe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think the delayed gratification versus right now is probably the more important element there.
Okay. Is there anything that we haven't touched on that you really wanted to share with folks today?
Oh, no. I think this is a great conversation.
Yeah. I'm enjoying it. And we're not quite done yet. Because I have a couple of extra questions, bonus rapid fire questions. That I like to ask everybody. And so the first is, tell me a book that you think everyone should read. Well, I think I might know the answer.
Yeah. The Balancing Act by Dave Baldwin. Okay. I did give a little shout out to my buddy JJ in his book, Teaching Kids to Buy Stocks. I think those are a couple of good books.
Okay. And I'll definitely put the link in the show notes for where people can pick up your book. So, all right. So tell me a song. It comes on the radio. You got to turn it up. You got to tap your toe. You got to maybe sing. Dance around. What's your favorite? What's your jam?
So, I'm a big Dave Matthews fan. Now, I don't know that any Dave Matthews songs are like, you got to crank it up. But that's definitely kind of my favorite genre.
Okay.
If Dave Matthews Band is his own genre.
I think it is.
Yeah. Like Crash.
Okay.
Maybe like some of the like, mid-90s, like the early stuff.
Yeah.
Definitely my favorite.
Okay. DMB, Dave Matthews Band. Okay. Tell me something that inspires you.
Something that inspires me. So, you know, this setup, the whole podcast, social media, you know, sort of a visual and, you know, just you know, social media is kind of allowing people to produce and create content. You know, it's really exciting to see all that. And so I always kind of stand in the background and watch. And I just think it's so neat to like what you're doing with Velocity and what some of the other folks here, you know, have been able to do with their podcasts and their shows. And so it's inspiring to sort of see that level of creativity. It does kind of make me want to be more creative. I would love to have that as like a creative outlet to do. But like the inspiration or just inspiring to kind of see how people are thriving creatively through, you know, different YouTube or podcasts or any of that. So it's, I don't know if that fully answered the question.
No, it's good. So what I'm hearing from you is The Balancing Act, the podcast, is coming soon.
Well, I don't know. It would be a neat venture, but you know, I got a lot going on.
Yeah. Well, let me know. I know a guy.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. Okay. Last question. Tell me a Vista business that you think deserves a shout out and why.
Well, and kind of like I was saying with just the creativity. Yeah, I think the Film Hub here in Vista is. I just think it's one of the neatest businesses. I mean, you know, co-working space is, you know, that's not, that's everywhere, right? But to be able to take it to that co-working space specifically for sort of media type of things, I just think is amazing because it's, you know, again, people who, you know, take advantage of or can use that creative outlet to create something, the Film Hub is making that possible because that's just one piece. Like not everyone's going to have the ability to just come in and like, let me build a podcast room or, you know, the amount of space it would take to do that. So having that for our community, I think is just absolutely awesome. And they're bringing in a lot of outside, you know, creators and production. So people are coming in and eating at our restaurants and, you know, staying here for a couple of days while they work on something. So, you know, what they're doing to bring people into the community, I think is really neat. So I give them a big shout out. I think this
thumbs
is an
up.
Awesome place.
Yeah. All right. I agree. I support that endorsement. So that's it. Well, thank you so much, Dave, for being here. Thank you for being my guest. And thank you all for listening to Velocity. If you like what you heard, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and tell a friend. Help us move Vista forward with Velocity. The Vista Chamber of Commerce is a nonprofit organization that serves as a catalyst for business growth. Find us online at vistachamber.org.